Morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Reading from Paramahansa Yogananda. How to do what you want, not guided by your moods. As a recorded talk, June 27, 1943. The steam is invisible. When it is condensed, it becomes visible. So the infinite is impersonal and invisible, but it becomes personal and visible by our devotion's frost. It is the infinite that has become very personal and finite, and in every finite thing you can see, the marks of the infinite, the invisible one. It is said, the tree came from the seed, and the seed came from the tree, but which came first? We are only a link in the chain of life, and the beginning and end are infinite. Only the middle is visible. Therefore, God, who is infinite, has become finite. Therefore, the infinite can be finite, because after all, it is only God's dream. Every finite matter is the expression of God. You don't know what God is, and that is your mistake. To the wise man, the form of the demon and the divine man are the same, because he only sees the one God. Just after the man in the theater sees both the evil man and the hero are the results of the one beam of light thrown on the screen. So the divine man sees nothing but the infinite light in all things. Those who think of a personal God will see God has a finite form. But the idea is, when he will come in that form, the entire infinite will be throbbing in that form. Just as the radio vibration, which is spread over thousands of miles of space, vibrates through one radio, so the infinite can vibrate through one little form. It is easier to think of God like that. I have been for a long time watching that, but lately I have not been devotional at all. I only say, thou and I are one. I cannot have any existence separate from you. How could it be possible? I see thou and I are one. That conception of the infinite is very beautiful too, because in it there is complete unity with God. We don't stand as slaves before God or its created being, but we become one with him. Mind nor intellect nor ego chitwa, I am he. Beyond the flights of fancy, fearless am I. Permeating all the realms of light, unseen as I. Bondage do I care, nor freedom do I crave, for I am ever free. Blessed Spirit, I am He. You meet God as joy, absolute existence, and absolute consciousness, and you remain in that state. Everything that is your own personality is gone. That is what it means. Imperfect union with God you have. Worship always keeps you, the devotee, apart from the object of devotion. But when you become one with God, you can't say you worship Him. You are one with Him. That conception is so marvelous. So whenever the idea of sin or trouble gets you, anchor yourself in the divine. In worship only, you think of yourself as separate from God. That is the dangerous worship of God. You must drown your personality into God. God is all. I am just the manifestation. He is I. It is not right to say, I am God, but it is all right to say that God is myself. The wave cannot become the ocean, but the ocean has become the wave. As soon as you say, I, that is personal worship, and it is dangerous. To say, I am God, is wrong, but to say that God is I is all right. Egotists cannot realize that, but when you merge yourself in that supreme being, then you have that consciousness. And in that supreme consciousness, when your mind becomes anchored in Him, all ego is gone. But when you think you are with Him and continue to say terrible things, you're in delusion. When we merge in the infinite, there is nothing that is ego. All things become pure. The greatest evil is not to see that God has manifested Himself in this world. Remember, if you are paralyzed and diseased in the body and still don't give up and continue to say, God is I, you will be liberated. Even when death is at your door, if you retain that consciousness now, determine to do it so now, and it will be done. Don't put it off. As soon as you say, tomorrow, I will conquer, tomorrow will never come. But think, today it is gone, and it will be gone. Because mind is all powerful. With the thought sword of this wisdom, destroy the thought of moods. You must always remember that it is your fault if some trouble comes. Most of the time you will be surprised to see that when trouble comes, it is because you are not acting or thinking right. If you take that attitude, you will get along with anyone. I have purposely mixed with those that have opposite views from me. I conquered them. I made it a point to do so. In a paradise you can be miserable, in Hades you can be a god. That is all done by your consciousness. If you feel insulted, everyone will insult you. If you feel no one can insult you, no one can. I never saw anyone insult Sri Yukteswar, Master. He was above hatred and insult. He conquered by His wisdom, by His power. So remember, if you are calm and say in your heart, I don't want to mistreat you, that person will get it. People are very funny. As soon as they find out your weakness, they want to rub salt in your wound. Remain in your good qualities and continuously give understanding to people. Then you will conquer them. To conquer human beings is the greatest art, and that art is sincerity and living the life. Don't let moods rule you. You are carrying much tendencies through hundreds of incarnations. You shouldn't be intolerant of others' moods, but you should heal them. Only way to be is an example. Find no fault with anyone but yourself. Then you will see how others change. There are various kinds of moods, good and bad. Some people have book reading mood. Some people read books by the hundreds, but I can't. It's the most tedious thing for me to do so. It seems like an ocean coming after me as I read somebody else's thoughts. But meditation comes easier to me. While to those who read much, meditation is difficult. After 2 or 3 hours, I can sit like one thought and know no time at all. If you will make your soul interesting, you won't know time. And if you just pour your soul out, you will find everything there. All knowledge is written there. So it is easiest to be in self. But people want to make it very hard for themselves, not to try to think, not to try to remain in themselves. Why? Because they have the habit of restlessness. They think they can't sit still. They would rather be on the go. That is their mood. They would rather do something in the home, but to sit is terrible. That hypnosis of mood keeps you bound more than anything else. I keep reminding myself in the beginning, it is not so many hours. Incarnations have been away from yourself, and now you must get back there. Just as soon as I said that, my omniconsciousness became lost to the body. This body is a mood. It is the most troublesome thing there is. It coughs and sneezes, and it is never all right. All the time working with it. Why should we think of going into samadhi, the mind asks. Your mood says, how nice is the body? I feel this body is the most repugnant thing. I don't like the body anymore. It is a delusion God has put over our souls. It is anything but perfect. All the time giving some trouble. Then why should you think meditation is such a difficult thing? That is your mood. You have developed the mood of being with the body. Why do you want to love the body? Why do you want to put a garland on it? The mood of restlessness is a grafted nature. It is not your real nature. It is a wrong thing. Your real nature is your freedom. I am the self. I don't have to meditate on myself. It is already there. Make it so natural that you feel the self all the time. Most of the time, I don't feel the body because I am in the self. The yogi breathes or doesn't breathe, eats or doesn't eat. No matter what he is doing, he is always cognizant of the self. He has changed his mood from the mood of ignorance, sense that it can elevate you or it can degrade you. Now, we all have temptations, as Master says here, from perhaps thousands of lifetimes. We have programming down in the subconscious mind that keeps us bound, that keeps us limited. Yesterday, we were talking about prosperity and the prosperous you. But we cannot have that prosperity if we are all the time giving in to the other kinds of thoughts and feelings. I don't deserve this. I don't ever get very much. That's not mine. That has to be somebody else's. If I receive something, that means somebody else isn't getting it. So then I feel bad and guilty about it. These kind of things destroy your prosperity. And it's not how God has meant you to live. God has meant us all to live prosperous. Now, that doesn't always mean that we all need to be millionaires, not by any stretch of the imagination. Somebody can live extremely simply, but they are content, they are happy, they are joyful, they are doing exactly what they are meant to be doing. They are the right fit in their life. They are completely prosperous. And yet they may not own the newest car, they may not have the largest house. These things are simply not in the cards for them. And there's no sense of resentment. There's no sense of feeling lesser. I remember one time in meditation, some image, I'm not sure why, but it came to me spontaneously. But it was of a young black woman who was entering into a room in which she was being sold as a slave. And the image of this woman was tremendous. She shone with a light. She carried herself with a straight posture. She showed a kind of dignity that put every other person in that room to shame. And when seen through spiritual vision, she was the most magnificent creature there. And the others were dark. They were controlled by their moods and their greed. And when seen through God's eyes, she was magnificent. Now, to the worldly standpoint, she was a helpless creature being sold. But this was not the spiritual reality. This is not really who she was, or a real statement of who the others were. You think of Jesus being brought before Pontius Pilate. Here he had been scourged with whips, he had been declothed, he had been put on with a horsehair blanket, he had been crowned with these thorns, blood was trickling down. And from a worldly standpoint, you'd say he is in a one-down situation. And Pontius Pilate, one of the top rulers in the world at that time, he was in a position of authority. And yet, when you look at it through spiritual vision, You see that one, the Master, Jesus, had tremendous dignity. He had tremendous spiritual power. He didn't respond as a servant. He didn't respond as somebody pleading for his life. When Pontius Pilate asked, "What is truth?" it was not a genuine inquiry into truth. That Jesus would have been interested in responding to. But it was a throwaway statement, as if truth didn't really exist. And how many people walk around, "Oh yeah, what is the truth?" They don't really delve into it. They don't really think about it. They don't go after it. The attitude is it really doesn't exist. And how else can you explain that even those of us who are intent upon the spiritual path oftentimes live as if God doesn't really exist, as if we don't really have a soul, as if there aren't really answers, because we don't really go after it. We don't really dig deeper for it. We live on the surface of life. We go through the motions, but we don't get deeper with it. And as a result of that, we don't get the truth. We don't come into that state of realization. We become complacent. We're not really going after prosperity and abundance in a spiritual way. And so on every single level, you can see where this may operate in your life. Whether it comes to health, material abundance and prosperity, prosperity of the heart, prosperity of truth, prosperity of realization, prosperity of oneness with the divine. We walk around in reality acting as if it doesn't really exist. Otherwise, we would not let a stone be unturned until we had achieved that total and ultimate consummation. So this mood of being attached to the body, this mood of what it is to be in this world, "Oh, I wake up, oh, I have to go to work today. Oh, man, wish it was a weekend. Oh, well, maybe I'll just roll over and sleep just for a little bit more. I don't want to go." Down and down goes the mood. Oh. Now, Swami Satchidananda was telling the story about somebody who was sitting and meditating. And a knock came on the door. Now, the first devotee, they didn't have the right attitude. "Don't they know that I'm meditating?" I talked to a Kriyaban one time. He'd sleep in until 11 o'clock in the morning, and he's in the basement, and his sisters would get up, and they'd be making noise. "Oh, he gets so irritated and angry. Don't they know I'm trying to meditate? It's 11 o'clock in the morning. What are they doing? They're playing music up there." He didn't think that maybe if he got up a little bit earlier, he might beat the crowd, huh? So he felt a sense of entitlement. So this yogi was like that. "So, oh, what are they doing knocking on my door? Don't they know that I'm meditating?" "Go to the door." "What? What do you want?" "No, I don't have time to do that now." Slam the door. Now, do you think that they could go back to their meditation blanket and sit down and be peaceful? No way. But the second yogi, he has a proper attitude. Knock comes on the door. "Oh, God has knocked on the door. He must have some requirement, some service that he would like from me." Walk up, answer the door. "Yes, what can I do for you?" He goes off, he performs the service, he comes back. When he sits down, he's peaceful. He's calm. He's got the right attitude. What if you think of your work not as slavery, not as something that you have to do, not something that you have resentment towards, but you think, whatever reason, God has me serving at this particular place, serving these particular person. This is my sacred duty. This is my dharma. This is my thing to do in the world. This is the way that I serve. I may not completely understand why it is in this place, at this particular. It doesn't seem grand to me. My mind judges maybe it's down here. I should be up here. It should be easier. I should have higher status. I should get better pay. But that's all things of the ego. So I just think, all right, this is the way that God has me serving today. And when I wake up in the morning, I go, okay, God, what's the adventure today? What are we going to explore? Who am I going to meet? What challenges am I going to have? And in those challenges, I don't meet them just as one solitary individual out on the battlefield. But you are with me. You are my charioteer. You are guiding me. You are directing me. You are empowering me in order to meet the day and whatever kinds of service I may be called upon to do. It's an exciting adventure. It's an interesting adventure. And so you make it so. You make your life interesting because you think it so. If you think your life is boring, if you think your life is going nowhere, that's exactly what you'll get. You'll get nowhere. And you'll feel that it's a repetitive task that is never ending. Isn't that the definition of Hades? You see in the Greek stories that what goes on in hell? Well, it's somebody who's always trying to push a rock up to the top of the hill, and they just about get it there, and suddenly they find themselves back down at the base of the hill, having to push it all up again, over and over and over again. Dull repetition. That's because they think it's so. They think it's so. But look at the individual who said, oh, this is my service. This is my moment to be able to fulfill whatever it is that the divine has me to do. And so I do it with a spirit of love. I do it with a spirit of peacefulness. I do it with a spirit of interesting adventure. And I take from the day whatever it is that it has to give to me. Now, there are some people, when they meet anyone who's happy, anyone who's taking joy in their job, and they're treated like they're poison. They're treated like they're venom. What are you, so happy with your life? You're happy to be here? I remember at an agency where I used to work, and people, I worked there for 13 years, and people would go, and they'd come back, and they'd visit, and they'd say, oh, are you still working here? As if that was the wrong thing to do. And I'd think, yeah, am I still working here? But I would go inside and I would ask God. I said, is this the right place for me to be? Is this what I should be doing? Yes, stay right here. Well, I had other thoughts, other plans of where my career might go. I was a counselor. I was a mediator. I had started a partnership business and I was thinking of branching out in that way. And one day God said, stop. All of that is behind you. Now you have a brand new life. Oh, that's interesting. All my ideas got swept to the side, right off the table. But I trusted. I thought, all right, this is the next stage. This is what God would like for me next. It's an adventure. I don't know how that's going to work. But I step out and I step forward. And when you do that, then the divine force comes in behind you to support you. But you see, you have to step out first. Think of Peter, being out in the boat with Jesus. Now, if you've ever been out in a small boat and the waves are tossing you around, it's not such a pleasant experience, even if you're a little bit accustomed to it. It's difficult. It takes time. You got to get your sea legs. So they're out in the storm. Suddenly, they see Jesus out on the water, walking towards them. Whoa, that's pretty fascinating. That's different. Haven't seen that one before. Not only that, but when he comes, he invites Peter to come out and join him out there. Well, that's something different, isn't it? It's one thing to watch somebody else do it. What would you do? Water's deep, waves are in action, storm is going. What would you do? Would you step out of the boat? Could you step out of the boat? Well, of course, as you know, Peter did. But he stepped out and he was looking into Jesus' eyes and he felt all right. He felt calm, felt peaceful. He knew everything was all right. Then his mind wandered. Started looking around. Started seeing these waves. Started thinking about how deep the water. He started sinking. Oh, he knew he was sinking. He's up to his knees. Panic starts to set in. Oh my gosh, I could just be swept away in this. Suddenly he looks up at the master. He says, Master, see, that's the thing. He didn't stay focused there. He looked up, Master. He started to come back up out of the water. Isn't that a lovely story? And we hear the story, but we have to really put ourselves into it, don't we? We have to really think of ourselves out there in a stormy conditions like that. What would we do? Would we even step out of the boat? Maybe the others were invited too, but maybe Peter is the only one who said okay. He had that, you know, he had that. Or once he got convinced, he's tough to convince, but man, once he did, he was like a tiger. And he hung on for all his worth. But he too was subjected to moods. until he went through so many experiences. And then at the end of his life, even at the point where they were going to kill him in the most vicious means, he said, all right. He surrendered to it. He surrendered to it. He had overcome his moods. Mood of attachment to the body, mood of attachment to this world. All people should respect me. All things should happen differently. There's a very wonderful story with the Nande Moi Ma. And a disciple comes and she asks some questions about who they are. And they make some answers and they get more and more confused as she asks more and more questions. And they finally say, I'm a fool. I don't know anything. And she said, ah, you're a fool. So you should never get angry again. Do you know why? Because it's only when you think you know better. That person shouldn't be acting that way. They shouldn't be talking to me that way. Things should go easier. This traffic shouldn't be slowing down here. It should be doing something different. You see, you think you know better. And because you think you know better, you judge the situation. And you get angry about it because it's not behaving the way you know it should be. So if you're a fool, she said, you can never get angry again. Because you know nothing. So don't pretend like you know anything. And accept what is. Now, does this mean we become a nothing? And this is the great magic. This is the great paradox. Because our ego mind says, if I accept everything, then I am nothing. And the truth is that spiritually, when you accept everything as divine, you become one with that. Now, the ego can't really conceive of that. Because the ego is so conditioned to thinking in subject and object. I am me and you are you. I am me, the world is out here. There's something that the mind has to be looking at and training its attention on in order to relate. But spirit is different than that. Spirit goes inside and it lifts you up and you become one with that spirit. You become one with that sense of being. You become one. You know, comedians love to make jokes about being one, you know, with all of this and all of that. And to the mind, it can be funny to think of being one with everything, but when you have a true spiritual experience with it, it blows your mind. It completely transcends anything that you can think about because you truly can't think about being one with everything. The moment you think, I'm thinking of this, you're no longer one with it. Do you see how that works? You're now judging it. You're now looking at it. You can't be one with it. But when you're lifted up in spirit and in consciousness, you become one with that. You merge into it. So sometimes people say, well, you expand. You go beyond yourself. But you can't really go beyond yourself. It's really that yourself identifies with something much larger. Instead of identifying perhaps just with this one body, you emerge and you expand and you feel yourself to be merged into this room. Into the consciousness of this room, into the energy of this room. And then you expand more. You don't feel unnatural. You don't feel like you've gone outside of yourself. You feel like yourself is now whatever it is that you're aware of, this world itself. Or you move out and you're a part of all space. Or even beyond that, you become pure spirit of which everything has been manifested. But you feel yourself to be a part of everything that's manifested and yet beyond it. Because you have become beginningless and endless. There's no longer, whether there's a tree or a seed, you have merged and you have realized you're part of both the tree and the seed. And you feel the one divine life force operating in both, the chicken and the egg. Now, the life force just takes on different forms, but it's exactly, identically the same life force. It's the same point of intelligence. And you have become one with that. And you realize before you existed in this tiny little shell, this cocoon of consciousness that made you think you were one individual living upon this planet. And you see how limiting it is. It's like being in the closet down in the basement. And suddenly you emerge out of the closet and you think, wow, look at, there's a whole huge basement here. Then you go up the stairs and you come up and there's this beautiful sunlight. And then you step outside the door and you see there's a magnificent, colorful world out there. And then you think, I spent my whole existence in that tiny little closet. And I used to think that was my entire world. And that darkness was absolute king, reigning with terror. How far that seems behind me now. And you would never yearn to get back into that tiny little closet and see that as your entirety. And so it is with realization, as you merge out and you come into these brand new and yet very deeply familiar states of consciousness, you know yourself to be a part of that old world in one way. It will always be a part of you because it is also part of God. But you would never think to cram yourself back into that tiny, encapsulated sense of self that you once lived with, but secretly you dreamed of the expansiveness and the freedom, the light and the bliss that you now experience in divine consciousness. And as Master said, now you know that you have a body. You sense the body, but more so you sense yourself to be that pure spiritual consciousness. Now your mood is a divine mood because it's inspired from that divine consciousness. Now people give in to their moods, and some people, and I hear some people say, well, I guess that's just the way that I am. Guess that's just the way that I'm an angry person. I'm a depressed person. I'm this or that. It's nothing could be further from the truth. But unless you take a stand and you decide to cast that off, then that will be your default. It's only when you decide with a firm, clear mind that you're not going to accept that anymore. And as we talked about yesterday, then you give yourself the alternative. You at least intuitively sense who you are when you're not that mood. Can you step into the light? It's an interesting thing. For instance, if you have a depressed mood come on you, you're not really interested in the light, are you? You don't particularly care where you're at, but if somebody were to invite you to step out of it, you'd be reluctant to do so. You're attached to that mood. And what we find out is that we're constantly creating. We're creating that mood. Now, you would think, man, why in the world would I create that mood? I hate being that way. And yet, we find that we're very, very attached to it for some reason or another. So with a clear, strong mind, we have to rise above that mood, make a different decision, give ourselves an alternative, and break that mood. We created it. We're the only ones who can break it. And when you do that, you stand separate from it. And if you were to turn around and look at that mood, you would see what a tiny, dark little space your whole spirit had been crammed into. And there would be no sense of attraction for it. There would be no sense of you wanting to get back there. But look at how we give in to moods. Look at how they take us over. First, it's just a little bit, but we slip into it like a comfortable pair of old slippers. And then it takes us down and down and down and down. To reverse that, we must reverse the mind. We must redirect the mind. And this is what self-mastery is. Because mind directs mood and it directs energy. And when your mind is focused in a particular path, your mood follows that and your energy follows that. It's not until you redirect the mind that you change that mood. You may say, but some moods just come on me. I'm not aware of thinking of anything. But I would tell you, if you could slow it down and look at it carefully enough, you would see that there was a very specific thought that came before that mood came. And that mood is responding to the direction of your mind. So let us be the masters of mood and change them. Attune them to your divine consciousness. Do not accept them. And if you can't send them away in a second, struggle with it, fight with it. Be determined to change it. And don't give up until you do. Because it has no life, no life at all except what you give it. This is a very humbling realization that I came to one time. I was fighting and struggling with this mood, and I felt like it was something that was imposed on me, but I was determined not to give in to it. And finally, I broke it. But when I did, I realized I'd been holding on to it. And the image that came to me was that it was like trying to open a door. And I was pulling on that doorknob with all of my strength. And I couldn't figure out why the door wouldn't open. Until I looked down and I saw that my foot was propped up against the door. And as hard as I was pulling it, I was pushing my foot even harder against it, keeping that door closed. I was doing it. Now, it wasn't a conscious process, so I didn't realize I was the one who was doing it. But nevertheless, I was. And so we have to get a clear, firm grip on ourselves. Determine where we are going to focus our mind at. Now, it's not all work, because when you do this, invisible forces come in to support you. Grace is operating through you. And when you make that determination, you have the power to overcome. It's not always easy. Sometimes you have to make clear, determined effort repeatedly. But at some point, you'll break the spell, and it's like a fever breaking. And when the fever breaks, you feel oftentimes cleansed and purified, don't you? And in the same way, when this fever of mood breaks, you feel cleansed of it. You sweat it out, and it comes out of you, and then it's gone. And you realize what a terrible prison and trap you've put yourself into, and you become very, very determined never to do that again. Declare your freedom. Mind is powerful. Mind is powerful because it invokes either spirit or attachment to this body and the world. So it's the battleground. But you have powerful, wise forces at your disposal if you will claim them and make a determination that is what you will live by. Finishing up with Master. Restless moods destroy the moods of calmness. Anger moods destroy the mood of calmness. Anything that disturbs mood of happiness is destructive. You should nurture all good moods. As soon as the disturbing moods come, slay them with the sword thought of wisdom. Life is a battle, and you must win it. Last of all comes the mood of indifference. Some people are bored with everything. It is better to have interest in life. When interest is gone, you are dead. But greater than that state is the interest in divine happiness. It is just as easy to be good as it is easy to be bad. It is just as easy to be greedy as to not be greedy. One thought I give myself when I go to the table, you are not going to overeat. Who can stop you from thinking you are a god? No one. You are the only obstruction. The true self that befriends the self is the friend of the self. And the self that is inimical to the self acts as the enemy. Now, when he's saying self first here, he means the little self, the ego self. And befriends the self, that means the true self, the God self within you. So he says, the self, the ego self, that befriends the self, the God self, is the friend of the self, the ego self. And the self, that is the ego self, that is inimical to the self, or the God self, acts as the enemy. When you say to yourself that you are a sinner, you are finished. Never let anybody tell you you are a sinner. Always keep thinking you are good, you are divine, you are free. So let us find that. Freedom from moods. And it's not just a fairy tale. It's not just a state that you talk yourself into. But it is an actual state of consciousness. And when you come into it, you recognize and know the difference. So let us have that freedom from moods and discover the true soul's freedom that is ever residing within you. You do not have to create it, it is already there. Closing, I'd like to read to you a delightful poem by Rumi. Rumi is one of my, he's a mystic poet. He was a Sufi, as a part of the Islam religion. And this is called Dalkot's Message. The king of Termid has urgent business in Samarkand. He needs a courier to go there and return in 5 days. He offers many rewards to anyone who will make the journey. Horses, servants, gold, and the robes of honor. Dalkot, the court clown, is out of the country when he hears this. He quickly mounts a horse and rides toward town. He rides furiously. 2 horses drop dead of exhaustion under his whip. He arrives covered with dust at some ungodly hour, demanding an audience with the king. A panic sweeps the city. What calamity could be the imminent Dalkot, the buffoon, should be so distraught? Everyone gathers at the palace. An evil omen has come upon us. Something has certainly been spilled on the rug this time. The king is worried. What is Dalkot? Whenever anyone asks Dalkot for particulars about anything, he first puts his finger to his lips. The king is worried. Everyone gets very quiet. Dalkot makes another gesture as though to say he needs more time to catch his breath. Another long wait. No one has ever seen Dalkot like this. Usually, he is a constant stream of new jokes. Usually, the king would be laughing so hard he would fall on the floor holding his stomach. The quietness is very odd and foreboding. Everyone's worst fears come up. The tyrant from Khwarizm is coming to kill us? Dalkot, say, what is it? I was far from the court when I heard that you needed a courier, someone who would go to Samarkand and come back in 5 days. Yes? I hurried here to tell you that I will not be able to do that. What? I don't have the stamina or the ability. Don't expect me to be the one. This is what you made such a commotion about? That you won't do it? Dalkot is like those who pretend to be brave on the spiritual path. The bridegroom's house is in an uproar of preparation, always making ready to receive the bride. But the girl's family knows nothing. Any message yet? No. Any sign of activity? No. Letters have been written and sent. But have any of them reached the friend, with a capital F, God? Has your inner lover read them? The end. So don't be like Dalkot, the spiritual aspirant who makes a big fuss, but nothing ever happens. So whether our minds, our hearts, our souls, let us open them. This prayer perfection that Mother wrote is a prayer of affirmation at first. It's a prayer that your mind prays with all of its heart, mind, and soul. And gradually it becomes a state of realization. That is what she wrote it from. She felt it. She knew it. Down through every cell of her body. And so as we repeat it, let us too strive to know it with every cell of our being and our body. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection,
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To the light within you. And may that all-powerful light ever awaken itself within you, guiding you all the way home until you feel free of moods, free in light, free in spirit, free in bliss.